It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I voted.
That's funny, because I was thinking, I wonder if he's going to tell me he voted early today.
I did. Oh, I always vote early. I 100% vote early. I mean, I also go do my grocery shopping at 8:30 in the morning on Sundays. I don't like crowds, and I'm very big on not going to. I will never go out to eat on a Friday night or a Saturday night anywhere. Unless it's one of the few places that still takes reservations. And even then, often not, because I'm like, it's just going to be super crowded and annoying. I vote early every time, but especially in the presidential general election. Because we're at the point now, which I guess this is a good thing in a way, but like even voting like in the middle of the day on a weekday, not close to the day, it still takes a while. Like it wasn't that fast. I'm sure it's way faster than it'll be on the day, but but here's the problem. The ads are still happening, and I'm still seeing the lawn signs. I'm just like, I'm done. I did it. You cannot influence me anymore. Stop it. I realize this is the one sort of dystopian future thing I'm really looking forward to, is when we get hyper-specific in our targeting of ads, like Minority Report style. Where it's just like, oh, Tony, you like this thing. In general, I'm actually kind of excited for that, because the thing that bugs me worst about ads are when I'm like, this has nothing to do with me. I don't fucking care. But especially this, because then they'll be like, according to our records, you already voted, so we're going to leave you alone with that shit. And we're going to use AR to blank out the signs. Like, I'm excited for that.
So have you ever done mail-in voting then, or?
No, I've thought about it, but it's one of those things that I'm like, oh, I should do that. And then by the time I think to do it, it's already too late. And also it's not that big a deal to just go down the road. I don't remember. I don't got no job. So it's not like I'm taking time off work or nothing. I just go do it. But the ballot's really weird this year. So here's the ballot in the Iowa City ballot in its entirety.
Okay.
It's not going to take as long as you think. That's how weird it is. So president, there's like 8 options, including several parties I've never heard of. Like there's the National Socialist Party. There's also like the Socialism and Love Party, or Cowboys and Aliens Party. Like there's just so many of them. I don't know, but there's that one. And then there is our congressperson one. And then there is a state legislature one, just one, running unopposed.
Oh.
So I think it may be a replacement. Somebody died or something. I don't know. But there's just one that's like, for this district in the Iowa legislature, here's a dude. He's a Democrat. No, there's no other dudes.
Oh, I think that's Jacoby.
Okay.
He's been in there a long time.
All right.
Well, and he often runs unopposed.
He's been there, and nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, he often runs unopposed, too.
And then it's a few positions that are local and county and stuff. Mm-hmm. Only Democrats.
Yeah.
Not too surprising for this county, but still, I'm just like, all right. And then there is the traditional one that we have, and this probably doesn't apply to a lot of other people in different states and things, a bunch of non-party based things that are like soil management panels and stuff like that. And they're all like, you need to vote for up to four people. And there's four people running. And so there's a lot of those. Then we have Iowa is a state where you don't, being a judge is not a lifetime position. There's a term and then it gets voted whether or not you get to stay in office. So then there's those. And then there are three ballot measures. And I'm going to talk about how I voted on these ballot measures because I find them interesting. And I find it interesting how I didn't know about them. I was not well enough informed on this. And I found it interesting how I decided what to do. One is a bond measure for water conservation and quality. And I voted for that because I'm into that. That one seemed pretty straightforward, and I know how I feel about it, and I'm willing to pay more taxes to get that. So that's great. The other two were amendments to the state constitution. Now, I will tell you right up front, I don't like amending constitutions unless there's a damn good reason. Because almost always when people are like, we should amend the Constitution, and I'm not saying it's inherent in the desire, but for whatever reason, in my entire life, when people want to amend the state constitution, 95% of the time, I am deeply opposed to whatever they want to put in. And these two I voted against. And I can't give you a compelling reason because I can't give you a except that I can't give you a compelling reason why they're there. I read the whole thing. And the first one is we're putting in the Constitution that when you're 18, you get to vote in elections. And if you're 17, when there's a primary and you will be 18, when there's an election, you can vote in the primary leading up to that election. And I'm like, other than the 17 thing, which I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. I'm like, isn't that already? But then there were places, and again, nothing I could pick out is wrong, but we were also very specifically talking about U.S. citizens and a lot of that very specific stuff. And eventually I'm just like, when people want to start getting real specific about who can or can't vote, I'm usually not in favor. I in general am in favor of enfranchisement for as many people as possible. And in my experience, the people who are opposed to enfranchisement for many people as possible have specific people they want to disenfranchise that leads to specific results for their specific political party, which is a concept I am vehemently opposed to. And then the other one was putting in the Constitution again, if the governor like explodes or dies or resigns or is lost or whatever, the lieutenant governor will be in charge and be governor until the next time to elect a governor. And I'm like, isn't that the whole reason you have a lieutenant governor? Like, how is this not already a thing? But then I thought about it more and more, and I'm like, in general, I am in favor of turning over people in political offices as often as possible. This is a thing of mine. If it were up to me, pretty much every political position would probably have a term limit of like one term. Because I consider a lot of the problems to come from stagnation and from people being in office thinking they know they've got it down. They've got it figured out. And so I am very much into turnover of new blood. And I don't know what the existing version is, but I'm like, hey, if it means we have to have a special election or whatever, I guess I'm in favor of that. So I voted no on both of those, which I found very odd. Or not odd, interesting. Because they were very, and don't get me wrong, there are some things I didn't vote for at all. Because I'm just like, I don't understand it. I don't know the ramifications of it. I don't have an opinion on it. So I'm not going to vote. But this one, I was like, it didn't pass the sniff test. I'm just like, there's just something weird. So I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to research heavily into both of those and see what's up before you vote.
Yes, there are ways to see what's on the ballot.
Of course.
Before.
Yeah.
I usually do.
Do you have any insight into these two ballot measures at this point, or have you not yet done your research?
I don't think I'm finished because I haven't voted yet. There's a lot of other things I want to look at, including the ballot measures, because I like to have an opinion on ballot measures. I was actually surprised to find out that Iowa, like you, I was thinking, well, what do you have a lieutenant governor for if it's not just like, you know, they become the governor or whatever. But what I've seen in reporting, I haven't looked at the Iowa Constitution to verify it for myself. But what I've seen in reporting is that there isn't actually a very clear line of succession from the governor, that something like a special election would have to be held. And so that's what this is about. It's like, well, we need in the Constitution to say, to be clear, because I think what everybody thinks, what probably would happen is what everybody thinks would happen, but it's the Constitution doesn't say it should happen, right? So in a way, yes, we do have a lieutenant governor, so they can take over when the governor's incapacitated, or if the governor dies, they'll take over. That is why we have a lieutenant governor, but it's not in the Constitution that should be how it is. Well,
and that makes me feel more comfortable, because if it is a non-controversial ballot measure, which it sounds like this is, then me voting against doesn't, like, I'm like, if this really is pretty straightforward and there's not a lot of arguments to both sides or whatever, then I'm not worried.
Well, but also,
and if there is a controversy, I don't want to vote for it.
Yeah, so. but you make an excellent point. It would be perfectly valid for someone to, you know, to look at this and to think, oh, they just want to codify what they would do anyway, and I'm okay with that, and say yes. But for someone to go, hey, wait a minute. Maybe I would like for there to be a special election. Maybe I would like for there to be other options, and I don't want the Constitution to lock us into one way of doing it.
Yeah.
That's actually quite clever and smart, I think. In fact, you talking about it has made me think about it a different way. I hadn't really decided which way I was going to vote on it, but I think I was in my mind, I was thinking, well, they're just putting into code what they're going to do anyway. But now that you've mentioned it, it's like, yeah, but they don't have to do that. Maybe I would like for there to be other options. Maybe I would like for someone to be able to say, hey, I challenge this. I want there to be a special election, you know, maybe because I'm with you. I'm in favor of things turning over, right? And I'm in favor of having more options to decide what's going on with, like, the order of succession. I mean, if someone's elected into an office, fine. But if they're incapacitated or if they die, okay, so then what, right? Because happens next typically has nothing to do with an election, but maybe it always should. You know what I mean?
So House of Cards, they just put your wife in.
So I really appreciate you talking about that, because I do think, I mean, again, I hadn't decided, but I really wasn't thinking in terms of, well, maybe I like that they are not specific. Maybe I would like for someone to be able to legally and without violating the Constitution challenge, you know, just putting the next person in. Well, I'm going to think about that. I appreciate. Now, the other one, that...
It's specifically about the 17-year-old thing, in which case I would be okay with it, but I'm also super okay with that not being the case. So, again, I don't feel bad. Like, oh, man, the poor 17-year-olds don't get to vote in the primary.
Yeah, I think that's mostly to you know, it seemed it the debate, and both sides have been concerned about it, but one side's been more concerned about the other. And by that, I mean one side feels like they benefit more from a youth vote than the other side, right? Mostly the Democrats, and feel like, well, we want young people to be involved in politics and so on. So, you know, this will be something nice for them. I didn't realize the amendment was going to have language about, you know, U.S. citizenship per se. I don't know if that was
And
like a compromise so that the Republicans would be okay with it or
it
something.
doesn't go into a lot of detail. It just makes very clear in a couple places, U.S. citizens, which again, I'm not sure that's not already the rule.
It pretty much
But
is,
it just,
yes.
when it comes to enfranchisement, unless it's very blatantly opening it up to a lot of people, then I'm not interested. I want more people. If I think you're saying these people can't vote and it's really because they won't vote our way, or these people can vote and it's really because they'll vote our way, I'm not interested. No matter what party you are,
Correct. Yeah.
I don't like that system. That's not, I don't like when you design the laws to benefit your party.
Right.
And that happens a lot nowadays, and I watch out for that.
So yeah,
I don't
I'll
mind, people can change laws that happen to benefit a party, but when it is very clearly, we did this so our party, you know, gerrymandering being the original and primary
exactly.
example.
No, I that's those are all fair. So yeah, I'll think about some of that stuff while why I consider those particular amendments also, because I think those are fair and good considerations, similar to the kind that I like to make. And then of course the local bond issue about defunding air, soil, and water quality or whatever. I mean that's I mean I think most people support that principle. They could ask questions though about, well, how much should it be? Who are you spending it? What are you spending it
How's it going?
on? Yeah. And so those are the things I look
I get
at
that, but
to make sure that, I mean, I'm definitely in favor of the cause, but I want to make sure I'm in favor of, you know, how they're doing it. And then, you know, I'll decide based on that.
and there's my voting. I do some research. I probably do more research than a lot of people, but I do less research than I should by a long shot. My voting style, the shortcuts I use instead of research have changed over the years. I used to, if somebody was running unopposed, or if it was, you know, vote for up to four and there's only four, I would just vote for all of them. I don't always do that now. And here's one I'll throw at you, and you really may not like this one. Other people really may not. If we had a larger platform, I might not even say it because I could get trouble for this one. But I used to just say yes to all the judges. Yeah, let them stay in. And then I said no to all the judges. Get them out. Just every single judge. Because I never know a single judge. I never know who they are. I have never seen the name before. I know nothing about them. I changed. I can't remember if Trish told me about how my father-in-law does it, or now maybe she and I had this conversation one time, hypothetically. I do it, but you want to know what I do now?
Sure.
I say no. I vote out every name that looks male, and I leave in every name that looks female. Because I'm like, I don't know what's going on. In general, I am in favor of turnover, but at this point, if I can put more power in the hands of women overall, I consider that a social good. And I know a lot of women in politics who have opinions and political positions that I hate. But from a representational perspective, I'm like, until we've got some sort of parity, in absence of other evidence, I want to give the power over to women. And I mean, if there was an easy way to see how many of the candidates weren't white, I'd probably do that as well. But that's harder to do by name. They all got very white sounding names.
Well, I think in Iowa, since it is very hard, well, not it's not very hard, but it is a burden to say follow all the cases of these people that you could vote in and out to decide, well, yeah, I like how they decided that. I like how they decided that. And the truth of the matter is, unless a judge has got some real scandal, you know, has done something which you would hear about, these people probably following the law. It doesn't even matter if they're Republican or Democrat. So most people in Iowa that I've known have one of two principles, and you mentioned them both. One was, well, I would actually rather our judges, you know, not have to worry about being reelected. So I just, a matter of course, vote to retain them all. Or conversely, I like turnover, so I always don't retain them.
Yeah.
But I have met other people who, since you're not really voting on them as in what they do, you're voting on some principle of I like to retain all the judges or I don't like to retain any of them. Well, pick any other principle you want, including I'd like to be some gender parity in the court. I mean, that's a perfectly good principle.
And in general, I don't like the politicization of judges in the first place.
I don't either. I agree.
And almost everyone agrees with me, especially a lot of big time politicians in terms of what they say. But what I have learned is most people consider judges to be politicized when they give judgments that they don't agree with.
Yeah, right.
And not politicized if they agree with them.
Right.
And
so
I have, in Supreme Court decisions, I have had times where I'm like, I hate that they made this decision. It's a tragedy. This is awful. I don't agree with it. I do see the legal and constitutional argument for it.
Right.
And that doesn't mean the judges should have voted differently. It means the legislative body, this could be state or national, needs to make laws that fit within the Constitution and or amend the Constitution. It's not the judges should change their mind. The judges are not there to decide if something should or should not be.
Correct. But,
and I do not want them to be there deciding if something should or should not be.
Right.
They need to decide the legal merit based on the existing law.
And most judges do that. Most of them do that. So and we know that. So statistically,
most judges try their best to do that. I think it would be very hard. I think it'd be very hard to do.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is, from a purely statistical standpoint, for you to say, you can look at a list of judges and say, I'm sure that probabilistically they're all fine. So I can use any principle I want, any preference thing I want, because it's not going to be about getting a better judge or a worse judge. And so if you think, well, I want some gender parity, that's perfectly valid, especially if, you know, the sooner that happens, the sooner you won't have to vote that way, because there will be gender parity or maybe even a majority of women in this. You know what I'm saying? When we get to the point in our society where men aren't dominating a field like this, then you don't have to use that principle to vote anymore.
I do believe that the year the courts ratified gay marriage within Iowa, I voted them all back in. I was like, you deserve a reward.
Well,
and that is wholly subjective on my part, not based on any legal argument. I was just like, fuck yeah. I like you guys.
Well, I also voted to retain that year because, first of all, it seemed like it was, I couldn't see how it was the wrong legal decision, right? Like,
and there were active campaigns to get them out because of the legal decision.
I think one of the justices even said, look, you know, I'm a Christian and, you know, I believe this about marriage and whatever, but this is the law. We can't exclude certain people from the institution of marriage based on religious grounds. We just can't do that. So I knew that, you know, and it seemed like sound legal. I didn't know why these people should be punished and their jobs taken away because they follow the law. So I said, you know what, I'm going to vote to retain. They're not. I know it won't work because there's just too many people to kick them out. And a lot of them did get kicked out. But yeah, I voted to retain them that year too. Because not just to reward them for doing a thing I liked, but to reward them for doing their jobs.
They had public proof that they had done impartial and correct things. So yeah,
right.
So, something like
right, that. Right. They should be.
I get that. No, I did it for purely.
Well, I also thought it was the right decision, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. You know, voting someone out because if they'd done something different, not only would it have been something I didn't like personally, but it wouldn't, they would not be doing their jobs. They'd be legislating from the bench, which they shouldn't do. So,
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that keeps you from sleeping. That's us, espresso.
Espresso.
I love
U.S. espresso.
I love making viral pop culture references 6 months after they were relevant.
I don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm William, and this is episode 711.
So there is a song by a musician named Sabrina Carpenter called Espresso that was a major anthem of the summer, in which the reference to espresso in the song itself is simply a recurring line that happens twice each chorus that says, say you can't sleep, baby, I know. That's that me espresso.
Me. Oh.
That's that me espresso. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And that was the thing. The song is an absolute bop, and I don't deny that. It's a very standard sex bomb, all the boys love me and I couldn't care less sort of deal. But it's a good song. But there were two prongs to its viral thing. One was like, this song kicks ass, and the other one was like, these lyrics make no sense. And I caught somebody just the other day talking about something, and he was like, it's what I like to call that me espresso. And also, it's been passing through my musical viewpoint recently. I've been listening to it a bit, and so it's just in my head. So
okay.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous song, but it's a fun song. I like it. It's good. But its popularity, well, I'll put it to you this way. She performed it on SNL like 5 months ago. So
that's how
with it I am.
Well, I don't even know anything about it. So
you don't know shit. I know shit 6 months later. So
okay.
I'm the hip one of this duo. And that is the saddest thing of all.
Yeah.
For those of you just joining us, you hopefully have a really good sense of what's going on based on what you've heard already. But in a shocking twist, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People write in, although I'm guessing nobody wrote in this time. I didn't actually check today.
Mm-mm, no.
But people sometimes write in with emails, with the comments, questions, topics, whatever, should they want us to talk about. And the hat magically forwards it to us and makes us talk about it. And we talk about it till we're bored. And that's the show, except when we don't got anything. And then this other stuff. And damn, we're way behind because I was on vacation and you weren't even there for the last time. I am confident you have not watched or listened to the episode.
No, I haven't.
It's fine. It is not good. It's only about a half hour. Trish and I are both very tired and like already thinking. That was literally the last full day of our trip. And so we were just like, whatever. Like our brains are already like, what do we got to pack? When do we have to leave? Like, so there's very little. And then a couple of topics I very specifically didn't talk about because I wanted to tell you about them and I knew you weren't going to listen. So I waited on those. So it's a nothing burger of an episode, unless you want to see and hear from the producer, which doesn't happen very often. And then that's fun. And see what the top, well, see a little bit what the top level of our rental property is.
Right.
So that was nice. I already talked about Polyphia, right? The musical group?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am diving deeper into them, and actually I'm really having fun. I am discovering a lot of new musicians in the sense that I'm into a musician and they do a collaboration with a different one. And then I'm into that one, and the and it's coming around full circle. Recently, because baby metal got me to a group called Bring Me the Horizon, and just last night I discovered that they did a collaboration with Aurora, who is somebody I'm already way into. But Polyphia does a lot of collabs, and so I'm discovering people like Steve Vai, who is really funny. We watched that, and Trish's like, "Who is that guy?" And she looks him up, and he's an amazing guitarist who's been around for decades and been members of all sorts of bands and just session musicians with a bunch of real amazing people, and just a guitar genius. But never heard of him. But thanks to Polyphia, I have. Sophia Black, who's sort of a hip hop artist, did some stuff with her. Did some stuff with Polyphia that I'm discovering. So I'm having a lot of fun learning about new groups when I learn about new groups. And it's pulling a lot of new music by them, which I'm really enjoying. But again, highly recommend Polyphia to anybody who likes a lot of guitar work and metal, or metal turn tinged rock, or metal turn tinged EDM, that kind of thing.
That's a
But
good
really.
thing that social media has brought about is that, like, it used to be if you were gonna break into a whole other scene, you'd have to find a radio station that plays that, and then maybe you could hear from a whole bunch of other people, and then if it's a local scene, you could go hear someone and maybe they'd have another band with them or people with them. But like, thanks to social media, if you hear about a band, you'll have all kinds of ways to learn about other people they work with or listen to, all kinds of ways, right? Like the
And
channels they subscribe to, whatever it is.
it's that hustle now, because also it's a lot harder to be successful as a musician, because you don't just sign with a company and they handle your publicity and everything. Streaming services for music do not pay nearly as well, and so you have basically you used to have one income stream, and now you basically have two income streams. The one that's still there is live shows. It's the only way to go. But the other one is now, if you have a successful enough YouTube channel, you can make money off of that doing music. But so I think this collaboration thing is extra important now, because that's how you get out there. And it's working. It's working on me, at least, because
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
discovering a lot of, I mean, literally just two members of Polyphia were in a baby metal video. And I was so impressed with their guitar playing that I looked up the names to look up the band to then get into it. And other ones where it's just like, oh, you watch this video with this artist you like and somebody else. YouTube on its own is like, you want to see more of them? And I'm like, yes, I do. And so I've been appreciating that.
Yeah, I
And
think
it's
that's
good
good.
because I like music, obviously. And I'm not interested in following popular music, but I don't want to just listen to the stuff I listen to forever and ever and then die. I want new things to be coming in, and this is a good way to do it. I like it. You and Abby should check out Bring Me the Horizon. They are like a hard metal, like mosh pit headbang and shit. And it's real. It's a lot of screaming into mics thing, but it's pretty good. I liked it. And they do some cool collaborations. So,
They're called what? Bring me
Bring Me the Horizon.
the
I discovered
horizon.
them through. They did a collab with Baby Metal on a song called Kingslayer, and I got confused because Kingslayer sounds way more like a band name, and Bring Me the Horizon sounds way more like a song name. But it's actually the opposite. But yeah, y'all should check them out. But yeah, Polyphia, I was telling my brother-in-law is an old school metal fan, like the hair metal days. But I thought he would be interested. And seriously, their guitar work is crazy. It's crazy. But Steve Vai, I'm looking more into him too, because he's his old six string, and he's one of those guys who plays a six string electric guitar and never lets go of that whammy bar. And I love those guys who it's like such a subtle adjustment. as opposed to the ones where just like on the big chord they're like whir. No, he's one of those like his back two fingers are just always holding it and he's adjusting it as he's strumming and it makes such cool sounds and oh, it's really good. In particular, Polyphia has a song called Ego Death that is a collab with Steve Vai. I would highly recommend people check that out if you want. They're very disparate in their styles, especially they've been around for a few years, but I feel like that's a really good exemplar of their stuff, and it's just a kick-ass song, and it's all instrumental. And a pretty cool video. Most of their videos are just like, look at us playing guitar. But I actually kind of enjoy that because they're the ones, they're really good at looking like they're in the groove, like that they're in the flow state. And I always like that when I see a musician that like is playing in such a way that you think they aren't even aware they're being watched and they're just
Yeah, right.
into it. I love that
Yeah.
vibe. And maybe it's a performative, but if it's convincing, I don't care. And they always seem to really look like they are into their performing, and I really like it.
Cool.
But yeah, Ego Death is a song I would recommend people checking out if you want to look into Polyphia or Steve Vai, I suppose. I like that our podcast has reached the point where you take notes. I appreciate
Yeah. Because I will forget.
that.
It used to be easier for me maybe to remember, but now I've got so much crap going on that I can't remember stuff.
Yeah. And you are very old.
Well, yeah, I
And
wasn't
don't
very
lie.
good at, I
Don't lie, you
wasn't
didn't really remember before either.
no, I was, I had a terrible memory before, but I didn't have as much stuff interrupting. Like I could after the podcast, I could like if I could
Immediately, yeah.
Yeah, if I could remember to the end of the podcast, which you're right, I didn't often, but if I could, but now I don't, I know it's, there's no point. I'm not going to remember if I don't write
Yeah. So, how's your
it down.
however much time it's been? What you been up to?
Well, we went, so we went to Pumpkin Patch this past weekend, not the one we usually go
Oh.
to. We went to a different one.
Why for?
Well, because the
Why
kids,
are you disloyal to your traditional pumpkin patch?
the kids who live pretty much as close to this one as they do to this one, right? It's like, well, can we go to this one instead? And we, of course, we didn't mind, so it's like, yeah, sure. And we've never been to that one, and that the one we went to, Bloomsbury, I want to say it's called, huge, just this huge sprawling thing with all kinds of stuff going on in it and stuff, which you know, in some ways was an improvement, right? Because the one we go to, it's got stuff, but not as much stuff as this. But also, it was kind of not, because it was like too much stuff. Like, there's no way you could
Yeah.
do all the stuff.
But
And there
it's
were,
that's the way to get people there, because otherwise you can just go to the grocery store and get pumpkin.
it was really
Like
crowded.
you gotta entice people to go to the farm.
And it was very crowded, and so. But it was fun, but like, did I prefer it over our smaller, the smaller one that's just, you know, 3 miles away? I don't know. I mean, if the kids want to go back, that's what we'll do. But I'm perfectly happy with the one that's nearby here. But we do have some pumpkins now, and we'll be carving those in a week or so. But it was fun to take the grandkids there and stuff. So that's really the biggest thing we did. We haven't been watching very many like movies or TV shows, you know, for the Halloween tide that are scary or whatever, because we can't find any that we think are any good. But we did start watching this show. It's got like 7 seasons from the Travel Channel. Is that still a thing, the Travel Channel?
Probably.
Okay.
I mean, are TV channels still a thing? I don't watch any of them
Oh,
anymore.
well, right.
But
But anyhow, called Paranormal on, not on, not not caught on tape, caught on paranormal, caught on camera, paranormal caught on camera. That's pretty interesting stuff. I mean, a lot of times it's stuff you're like, no, there's nothing impressive about that, or yeah, that's fake, that's staged or whatever. But sometimes you're like, I don't know what that is. That is an interesting thing that someone caught on camera, and I can't, it's never anything that makes me go, oh, that has to be paranormal, or that has to be aliens, or that has to be, you know, like that the only explanation is paranormal. But it is interesting.
Is that a... Can you envision evidence that to you would convince you of the paranormal? Because I can't. I mean, other than firsthand, I can't imagine seeing something on a screen.
Yeah.
That would convince me. Which is why my favorite joke in every paranormal movie is they're like, look at that. There's no way you could fake that. And I'm like, yes, you could. And I know you could because this is a movie. And you did.
And you just did.
Therefore, you could.
Well, but also, like, I don't know. Maybe some people either haven't seen very many magic acts or haven't had them explained to them. Because when a magic act is explained to you, it's almost always the most underwhelming thing, right? It's like, what? That's it? I was so freaking impressed by that, and that's all? And if you haven't have experiences like that, you're like, just because I don't know doesn't mean it's not some really stupid, easy thing.
And just the absolute amazing, mind-boggling, wild stuff that I have seen that has been explicitly fake, nobody was pretending, I'm like, so if you can do that, you can definitely do, you can have a door move on its own.
Yeah, right.
The fuck?
Well, and...
But I'm also one of those that if I'm like, I can't explain it, that does not automatically mean, therefore, there's fucking ghosts.
Right. You can get a door to open and make it do so in a way where when a person rushes over and investigates it, they can't find any obvious way that happened. Yeah. You could do it that way, too. I mean, people think, well, I don't see a string. It's like, oh, there's ways. I've seen it happen. I've seen it done by, like you said, by people who weren't trying to trick anybody. They were just trying to impress people with how they could make things happen, and you can't explain it.
Well, and also there's ways a door could move on its own that aren't set up by anybody that just happen that also don't mean there's ghosts.
Well, and we've talked about this before. You know, growing up on a farm like I did in a drafty old farmhouse, you hear sounds all the time that sound like things, but you know it's not that thing. It's just how old houses work. So it tends to make you skeptical.
We talked about this in the podcast last week. So our rental house, the rental cabin, we get there, it's nice, whatever. The first night, I tuck Trish into bed, and I go downstairs, and I'm messing on the computer. I'm high, which doesn't help the situation. And there's noises, but like specific fucking noises, like knocks on the back door.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I go and look, and I turn on the lights and the sunset, and I'm kind of freaked out. And then the next day, I realize those noises are all the time. And I still don't know what that sound is, but it happened all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, once I found out that all these noises happen in the daytime too, just never scared again. The rest of the night, pitch black late at night. I'm still high. There's weird sounds. I'm like, yeah, but we joke. We're like, yeah, the house has demons. And we're like, what was that? That was a demon. But like, initially very scary. And then once the next day happened and the sounds continued in the daylight, I was like,
what? Yeah. Well, so your question about, well, what kind of thing would I have to see that would make me go, oh, that proves it. Okay. So there are some videos where, the reason they don't impress me is not because what it's captured wasn't impressive for whatever it was. But because I'm pretty sure I know how easy it would be to fake. And I have to believe that the person who shot the video faked it. Now, that means my theory for why this video is inauthentic is because I think the person that they're interviewing who says, hey, I'm so-and-so and I made this video, I'm saying that person's a liar. That doesn't feel very good. I have to be honest with you. I don't like sitting there thinking this is... I mean, it's one thing for someone to tell me a story of an experience they had, and I maybe think that I believe them, right? This is what you experienced. I believe you experienced it, but I might.
You're lying. I just don't think it means.
Right. Guys. Exactly. That I don't feel uncomfortable just disagreeing with someone's interpretation of an event, but to think the person who's presenting this thing is an outright liar, I don't. That doesn't feel good. I don't like thinking that. But that explanation makes more sense to me than what they're claiming, right? Because
which is why I posit the original question outside of like I come to you with something that I videotaped and I swear up and down, like, or a personal friend or whatever, or some obviously a firsthand account.
Yeah.
Can you even envision anything that you could see footage of that would make you go, wow, I think ghosts might be real, or wow, I think this is legitimately supernatural? Not just like I don't know how they did that, but like I now am pretty sure that was a supernatural thing. Can you even imagine something like that? Common premise in films where people do dangerous shit because they're like, we could finally prove the existence of ghosts. And I'm like, no, you could not.
Well,
I'm not saying that because I don't believe they exist. I'm like, there's nothing you could show that would give any consensus to people that is real.
I take it back. There is something, and I'll explain in a second. But even if I was there, like sometimes Abby and I will talk about, and this is one of the reasons we love watching this show, is because, well, what would you do if this happened, right? What would you do if a chair slid across this floor and nobody in these scenes who are there watching this happen ever do what I would do?
Yeah.
They just stare at it, or they run away, or like, I would immediately like go right to that thing and look at it and like, you know, examine it. I'd look at where it came from. Like, that one thing that frustrates me about these things is they have people who comment on the videos, and these are paranormal investigators or whatever. And they talk about doing an investigation, and I never see them investigating anything. I just see them walking into a room. It's basically, it's a dare. And in two ways, it's a dare for them to go there, and then they dare whoever, whatever entity's there to do something. That's not an investigation. An investigation is when that chair slides over, you immediately go and look that thing over and look where it came from and examine the course it took and start thinking about what could have caused that. And they talk about debunking things. They don't debunk anything. It makes me so frustrated. But even if a chair went across the room and stopped and I looked around and I couldn't figure out what the answer is, even then I wouldn't jump right to a conclusion of paranormal. And so the thing I can imagine that would help me believe it, and the reason I wouldn't believe it just based on a chair going across the room, is because it would have to be something repeatable, right?
Yeah.
It would have to be something that I could subject to scientific test, right? Where I can put that chair back in its place and it's going to slide over every single time, no matter what, right? And I can measure all kinds of other things, and then I can say, okay, it's moving. It's absolutely moving by itself. I have proven out of several different iterations of this experiment that this is moving on its own, violating every law of physics that we know of. So some other law or some extra dimensional law must be at work. But you can't repeat it. So I have no way of, I can't replicate this chair sliding over here. So there's always some, I can always imagine some piece of information that I can't access because I can't repeat it. So then there's always this thing to dismiss it as being paranormal.
Yeah. I really like, and this is going to be a really good segue, actually. In the first episode of Hill House, and Steve talks about, I don't use the term supernatural. I don't think supernatural is a thing. I use preternatural, because it's natural events that we just don't understand yet.
Right.
Oh, little sidebar here. I hope it's a little sidebar, because I really do want to talk about Hill House, because we rewatched it.
Oh, fun. We did too, as you know.
Yeah, but you've rewatched it 1,000 times. in Jordan Breeding recently did the Hellraiser movies in one of those things, because there's very Halloween, and that was awesome for me, because I'm really fascinated by the Hellraiser movies, but I find them really tedious and boring and can't manage to watch them all.
Right.
So it was really fun to sort of see the stories there and all that. But he took a little detour talking about the concept of objective truth. And it's basically a four square thing where your axes are, if something has an objective truth or is subjective, like something has a definite answer, or it's something that is a matter of opinion or whatever, or a matter of subjective perspective or whatever. And then the other axis is we know the answer, or we don't know the answer.
Mm.
And so something has an objective truth to it, and we know it. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Like, we know this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Something is subjective and we don't know it is nothing, because you can't have an opinion on something you don't know anything about. Like, what do you think of my mom's spaghetti sauce?
Right.
You don't know.
Ignorance. It's just ignorance.
Yes. Subjective things that we know are where opinions come in.
Right.
Just in general. We know this is a situation. But there's a category of objective things that we don't know. And that is where theories and faith come in, and people don't realize it. So, you, by this definition, you cannot have an opinion about whether aliens exist. Because they either do or they don't. And we don't know. So right. You can just have a theory or have faith in it. Most anything that's binary like that. God, I suppose, is the same thing. You can't have an opinion on whether or not God exists. You can have faith that he does, or a theory that he doesn't, but it's not an opinion, because there definitely is a right answer.
Mm.
But also, we don't know what that answer is.
Yeah, that's a helpful way to think of it.
Yeah, and because a lot of people are like, that's your opinion. No, opinion is a subjective thing. And whether or not God exists is an objective thing. It's just an objective thing we don't know as people.
Yeah.
And I found that to be it's a very interesting perspective. And it's especially in this sort of political era, when people make statements, it's very interesting to be like, because people talk about things like they're facts when they're actual opinions. I'm like, yeah. And sometimes it's also just theories that they talk about as facts, or that people respond to as opinions. It's like, no, it's not an opinion. There's definitely an answer.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know it.
Yeah.
So I found that very interesting.
Yeah, that's very helpful, especially since like kind of the as a person who liked nonfiction when they were young and sort of found a way to appreciate fiction later in life, that's the avenue that I took. Those things that would have to have an answer, but we just don't know it. So, so those stories about that, like cryptids and all that, stories about that stuff, ghosts.
And ghosts.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's not fiction or nonfiction, right? That's interesting.
There's definitely a right answer.
Yeah.
We don't know what it is.
And the people who tell those stories, they don't think what they're saying is fiction. And I don't think it's fiction either, even though I don't think it really happened like that. Right. So it's like, how interesting. Yeah.
It's a theory. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love it.
And
I love
that's a really useful tool, but I want to talk about Hill House.
Okay.
Because we watched Hill House and I got issues.
Oh, okay.
But I want to open with this. Tremendous show. If you have not seen it, I highly recommend you see it. The performances are brilliant. The filming and production values are incredible. The work that has gone into it is super impressive. It is, I was going to say objectively, but it is, in my opinion, a very good show.
Mm, yeah, I think so too.
However... on a second viewing or any repeated viewing, assuming it's not been so long that you don't remember anything about, like in a viewing where you basically know, remember how the story goes and you know what the answers are to the mysteries and all that kind of thing. It is fun to notice things and foreshadowing and subtleties. And of course, in this one, ghosts in the background, statues moving and shit. That's all cool. But when the tension and mystery is gone, I notice other things that I do not like as well.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm interested to know.
some of it is some character arcs don't entirely work for me, and some characters, the language of cinema wants us to change our level of sympathy, where I don't believe that what has happened actually warrants that. Some people are shitty, and then suddenly we like them, and I'm like, but they're still kind of shitty, which is a problem I have in general. But here's the big one. Here's, well, I, okay, there's a there, there's a small one too. I don't love this one, but Mike Flanagan's amazing, but why is it always about addiction?
Well, yeah.
I get it. Everything is about your alcoholism. And this is true of pretty much everything he's made.
Yeah.
And in the moment when it's exciting and what's happening, that's cool. But then on repeat viewing, you're like, oh, it's just always about fucking addiction, drug addiction. In metaphorically, literally, whatever. And I get that that is a very useful thing, but at a certain point it becomes, I've seen this from you already. And so that's a little bit annoying, but whatever. But the big one is this. It's for simplicity's sake, it qualifies as elevated horror because there's some very metaphoric things going on here. And there is a very common metaphor in a lot of elevated horror and modern horror and symbolic horror and things where supernatural occurrences, hauntings, possessions are metaphors for mental health issues. And I am super fine with that. And I think it is an extremely useful narrative device. And Hill House is definitely doing that to a degree. However, it also has a lot of genuine, legitimate mental health issues in it. And it doesn't work in both ways. You can't have actual mental health issues in the same story and with the same character who have other mental health issues that are like, oh, that was actually ghosts. You can't have it at the same time. I'm like, is this a metaphor? Is this not a metaphor? And Hill House seems to be trying to have its cake and eat it too. And that makes the whole vibe disruptive to me.
Sure. Yeah, I
Because
hear you.
sometimes I'm like, oh, this person really has some psychological issues. And then other times I'm like, oh, this person is really haunted by an evil house and it has caused them to have these problems that other people interpret as psychological issues, but aren't. They're ghost problems.
Right,
And
right.
I'm like, one or the other, awesome.
Yeah.
But blending them,
Yeah.
and it makes character sympathy so much worse, because like there's a lot of stuff where people are like, you're crazy, and by the end of this they're like, I'm sorry, you were actually haunted. But then there's other things where they're like, you're crazy, and it turns out they were crazy. Like, and then there like it feels very much like trying to do two things that are not compatible with each other, and I found that very frustrating.
Interesting.
And sort of disingenuous to certain degrees because these characters are really fleshed out. I have feelings about all of these characters, and on repeated viewings, I have even more feelings about these characters,
Yeah.
which again, to the show's credit, but it's really hard to process those feelings when some of the stuff is psychological, some of the stuff is just personality based, and some of the stuff is because ghosts are in your brain. Like all of those things at once is just too messy, and it makes me feel very weird about bits of it. Such that it'll probably be quite a while before I rewatch it, for those reasons, because I don't know how much I would get out of it. And to be honest, I don't rewatch anything. This is a rare circumstance that I rewatched Hill House. It was Trish's idea. And I don't know. I'm not rewatching Bly Manor. I haven't rewatched Midnight Mass, and I haven't rewatched The House of Usher, and I'm not going to watch Midnight Club. But I do feel like Flanagan is evolving, and I think in some ways his messaging, his writing is maybe more polished in the later ones.
Maybe.
I don't know, because I haven't rewatched them, but I imagine I will at some point. Especially Usher. I really liked Usher. Midnight Mass is very conflicting to me on personal levels. Like, I think it's very good, but I didn't necessarily like it all the time. But it's also much shorter, so I may rewatch that at some point. I don't know. We'll have to see. I have so many movies to talk about because we watch so many movies, but we're out of time. And due to scheduling reasons, you and I are recording another one in like 3 days. So I'll probably just talk about them then.
Sure.
Did I talk about Kevin Can Fuck Himself? All right. We are almost done with season one of that show. I think I recommend it. It's unique. It's a very unusual show. And I like that. And even when I didn't like it, it's sort of compelling in some ways. It's interesting. That's where we are right now in our TV shows. We're just about finished with season one of Kevin Can Fuck Himself. And we are one episode away from the end of season three of Hacks. And then I think Hacks is my show. Like, we each have a show we pick. And I think the next one I'm picking is Agatha All Along, because it should be just about done. So I'm there for that. Unrelated, have you seen the trailer for Love Hurts? Check it out. It's coming out in February. I might actually go to the theater to watch it. I am so excited.
I don't know anything about it. What is it?
I didn't either.
Oh.
It's, well, for starters, and this is the thing that gets me immediately, it's the lead in it is Ki-hee Kwan, who I am in love with, and I'm so happy he's getting a renaissance to his career right now, and absolutely believed he deserved the Oscar for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and that was great and all that. And it's basically he's a very successful real estate agent. And then his past comes back to get him, and it turns out he used to be like a killer or whatever, but he left that life behind. It's that kind of story, which makes me a little nervous. I'm like, is Ki-hee Kwan being typecast as a nebbishy little dude who secretly knows a lot of martial arts? Because that's a weird niche, but you just got to see the trailer. It's just, I mean, I adore him. I think he's a tremendous actor, and I also just think he's so fun to watch perform straight up. Even back in the day when he was a kid and was put into vaguely problematic roles, he was always just so fun. I haven't watched Temple of Doom and never will, but I've seen clips, and him as Short Round was amazing. Data from Goonies, amazing. Both of them horribly problematic, but his performance is wonderful. And season two of Loki, he does a great job. He's everywhere right now. And I love him to death, and I probably would see just about any movie that he's the lead in, but this just looks real. It's that action comedy vibe, and it just looks real fun, and I really want to check it out. Okay. So, people talked about there was some movie Love Hurts and they're excited or whatever, and I was like, whatever, that title on its face, I probably wouldn't be interested.
Right.
But then it was popping up, and the YouTube thing said Kiki Kwan. I'm like, oh, what the crap is this? So I looked it up. I'm like, oh my god, seeing this movie. I might actually go to the theater to see this movie. I'm so excited about this movie. But next week we can talk about the thousand other things that we watched on vacation, including the Borderlands movie.
Oh. Huh.
And counter to what I said, I did spend $10 on it. Because I was so excited to see how terrible it was. I do regret spending $10. I'm not going to go into everything, but it's as bad as you think it is. It's real, real bad.
Okay.
But we can talk about that next week. All right. You got to stop us, people. Email us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com, or else this is what happens just all the time. And it's, nobody wants this. I don't want this. William doesn't
want
this.
We don't want this.
I don't care what William wants. But
no, right. I don't.
Are you familiar with the show Hot Ones?
Yeah. Yeah.
They did an episode with Peter Griffin.
How did they do that?
I don't know.
Oh.
But he was animated and nothing else was animated. I've only seen a clip from it. I don't intend to watch it because I don't. Why would I? But yeah, it was total live. Sean Evans is there and he's just him. And then they just had an animated Peter Griffin sitting in the other chair.
So Hot Ones, that guy asks really good questions.
Yeah, that guy is an amazing interviewer.
He really
is. All Hot Wing shit aside.
Yeah.
And you can tell that. Because almost every guest is like, holy shit. When, like, at least with one of his questions, they're like, where did you learn that? Or, oh, I never even thought about that. Like, he's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's almost a shame that the Hot Wings are kind of getting in the way of answering some of these really good questions, but it's fun. It's fun. We watch it sometimes.
There is a part of me that, I used to really enjoy the various videos of people eating way too hot chilies and like losing their fucking minds. But at a certain point, it literally just looks like torture. And so it started being a little less something I was into. A Hot Ones hits right the level because I'm like, they know what they're getting into and it's very gradual and deliberate and they can stop at any time. And so I enjoy it for that. But yeah, I do. YouTube tries to throw them at me, and it's very much like, is this a person I actually want to see talk? Or is this a person that it looks like he's not going to be able to handle? I can't help it. I guess a guilty pleasure, as it were.
But. Well, I only knew of one other, like Hot Pepper Game Reviews or something.
Yes, and they finally stopped for their own health.
Mm.
That channel actually something. I was watching a video that Weird History Food Channel. I really love that Weird History Food Channel, and they did a history of hot sauce basically, and they talked about Hot Pepper Gaming was at the forefront of the era where we were all about the hottest peppers and making everybody suffer and all that shit. And I watched that show regularly. I watched that every episode. And I remember when they stopped, and they basically stopped because they were like, they were all 20 somethings. And they're just like, we are getting too old for this. And it is no longer worth making each video for how much we suffered during and especially after. And at least one of them, their doctor was like, you cannot keep doing this.
Yeah.
Because they were very white young people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember watching the shit out of that show. All right, people, we're out of here. So if you can't sleep tonight, you can just rewatch this video for more, us espresso. God, is that going to be the episode title? That seems terrible.
You said the Slurpee episode or something, you said.
I did say before we started because it's 7-Eleven, the Slurpee episode, but that seems a little too brutal. We'll see.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.